Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and as always, I've got my lovely co-host, Jazz, in Melbourne. Melbourne, so how are you doing today, Jazz? How's the Melbourne city treating you? Everything is so perfect as always.
Yeah, I was just checking the stats. It's still most livable city in the world. Sydney was, I think, number 7 or 8.
Mate, yeah, I think this conversation will not end well if we keep doing it like this, to be honest. But anyway.
Especially if we have got a guest from another state, that will get a little bit complicated.
I know. I kind of don't want to steer into that direction. But anyway, I think just to preface our conversation a little bit today, I know a lot of my customers is actually looking at cash flow positive properties. That's essentially what everyone is seeking, right? That kind of unicorn property, which when you buy it from day one, it's giving money to your pocket from day one. That's the ideal scenario. And I think, you know, Jazz, that's what we discussed a few weeks back, and we touched on student accommodation as well. But you know, like that's today what we're going to touch on today is basically another different type of strategy, similar type of concept as student accommodation, however, different type of beast, I should say. And I think that's why we've reached out to Neil Gibb, who is the owner and director of the HMO Property Co. Neil, welcome to the show.
Morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
As always, I think we appreciate you spending your time and coming onto the show to share your knowledge. I guess just for our listeners, because if they may have not heard the term HMO before, what does HMO stand for?
The HMO stands for House of Multiple Occupancy, which is essentially a share house or a co-living space.
Okay, a co-living space. So imagine a house that's got, you know, each room's been converted into, for example, they've got their own kitchen, they've got their own bathroom, they've got their own bedroom, and you've got like 4 or 5 or even more of that in the configuration. Is that correct?
Yeah, kind of. So a house, which is what a HMO is, if we put kitchenettes in the houses, Okay. Then we trigger change of use. So the majority, in fact, 99% of the properties that we have are just houses, with the rooms rented out individually with shared access to kitchen, laundry, and bathrooms.
Right. Okay. So it's a shared facility as per se. And then basically the rooms are being rented out separately. Okay.
Yeah.
Now that's an interesting concept. And I guess what made you started looking into HMO? And, you know, I guess this is a good leeway to maybe talk a little bit about how you start and what made you look into this.
So my wife and I are originally from the UK, as you can probably tell by my accent.
And great accent,
thanks. We basically were brought up in a small town in the northeast of England, and it was one of them work harder, not smarter sort of environments where we were taught that the harder you work, the more money you'd make. So we've got a really sort of hard-working ethic instilled in us from right. the younger years.
Yep.
We came to Australia 10 years ago with absolutely no education around real estate whatsoever. And a friend of mine that had a small portfolio back in the UK took me to a property investing seminar. And it was by a company called it was by Robert Kiyosaki. I think we all know who Robert Kiyosaki is. Yep. Yeah. And it was all about creating cash flow positive real estate, which I had no idea what cash flow positive real estate was. We had no idea how to create wealth or cash flow from real estate. So this was like a massive eye opener for us when we went to this seminar. And from there, we joined up. But the only problem with that seminar was it was trying to promote real estate in the United Kingdom, which we just left. So we were wanting to do stuff in the UK, in Australia. So we did a bit of a search for cash flow positive real estate in Australia, and we couldn't really find anyone. Everyone was into negative gearing and didn't really sit well with me. So we kept the search going, and we came across a lady called Dimna Boholt from Isle of Real Estate. And we joined the Dimna Boholt community, and we did a few little renovations using doing joint ventures. So some of the things that Dimpner teaches are joint ventures,
yep,
and renovation. So we basically joined the course, followed the education, put a joint venture together and did a renovation and made $30,000 to $40,000 from it.
Yeah.
And okay, as part of Dimpner's community, she also had a guy working with her called Ian Ugarte. And Ian set up a community called the High Income Real Estate System,
mm-hmm,
which are short for high res. And this really focused down on producing cash flow from real estate. And we're talking anything from 10% to, I know there's students in Melbourne and Queensland that are getting 16% gross returns on residential real estate.
You're right.
So we, yeah, and there was something about Ian that we liked. He had a great personality, a sort of, you know, when you talk to someone, they've got that sort of magnetic connection where you just feel like you connect with them instantly.
Yep.
Because we'd made money from the first course that we joined, we then spent some of that profit to educate ourselves again with Ian's High Income Real Estate System.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually around, so it'll be 3 years in March that we first joined up to the high-res course, and we went along to a boot camp and we sat in the crowd. And we basically had our principal place of residence and no other real estate whatsoever. And we sat in the crowd and we listened to Ian and some of his team members talk about how all these different deals that they've done, mm-hmm, using their own real estate and other people's real estate to create cash flow. And my wife and I were just inspired and motivated by everybody else's stories. And we always use other people's stories to inspire and motivate us, even today. So we basically went back to Perth and we converted our principal place of residence into what we call a HMO, which is the house of multiple occupancy.
Okay. Can I just stop you there? Now, the Perth place, how long have you had it, or your PPOR?
So we purchased that from it was a house and land package from a developer, and it's 30K south of the CBD.
Okay. So a bit of distance. Mm-hmm.
A bit of distance. We weren't 100% certain whether the strategy was going to work this far out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we converted it, we actually moved in with the in-laws.
Well, that's another interesting experience.
So that was our way of sort of covering ourselves in case that the HMO didn't work in that area. We were just going to move back in.
Right.
Okay.
But how, I guess, was it a pure luck that your PPOR can be converted to HMO? Because I think from my understanding, not all the properties can.
Correct, mate. Yeah.
What are some of the regulations, or what are some of the things that that people need to know if they want to look at applying similar strategies, so converting their own PPOR into an HMO?
Yeah. So the strategy works well with the more bedrooms. So we're finding that 4, 5, and 6 bedroom houses are the sort of sweet spot for it to work in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
So we have converted some 3-bedroom houses with a family room and create the family room into a bedroom to create that 4th bedroom. And compliance-wise, each state has different policies surrounding this strategy. So Queensland, New South Wales, and Victoria all have completely different policies, allowing different numbers of people to live in houses.
Mm.
In Perth, we've got a statewide policy that allows us to have up to 6 unrelated people living in a house. And that's how the HMO is created. We can go up to 6 unrelated parties. And that's where the HMO sits. If we go over 6, then we trigger a change of use and we have to start going down lodging and boarding house routes, which is, it's very, very complicated and we haven't gone down that route yet.
Yeah,
but
right.
We are with this year.
So is there like a minimum block size or, you know, certain frontages or that kind of stuff or can you just convert an existing house as long as within, you know, you don't have more than 6 people living in a house? You can change anything inside a house to be able to cater for the HMO arrangement. Is that the correct understanding?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's just for Perth, isn't it? So you need a caveat that it's only for Perth.
Just for Perth. That's correct.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
When you said at the start, you moved from UK to Australia. What made you make that move, first of all? I mean, we all know Australia is a beautiful country, but is there a particular reason that you decided to move from there to here?
Yeah, well, apart from the fact it is a beautiful country, I always had probably blame it on my mother and stepfather, because they always said to me, don't settle down too early, travel the world, see the world. And my stepfather was a tradesman, and he was always saying to me, travel the world and earn good money doing what you do. And that brought me to Perth. And when I came to Perth, I ended up in the oil and gas industry and ended up on projects, some of the mega projects in the West, like the Gorgon project and the Wheatstone project. And then projects started to wind down. And that's when we started to look into real estate to sort of, give ourselves that. We didn't expect to happen what happened, but we just looked to bring in some additional income from real estate to supplement our lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did the Perth market not scare you at all with the prices that have dropped in the last couple of years to enter into the real estate market after leaving your job to try the HMO stuff?
If the property was negatively geared, then it might have been an issue. But the first property that we converted, we took the rent from what would have been $400 a week to $815 a week. So that property was then putting money in our pocket week after week. Even though the value of the property went down, we didn't necessarily feel the pain as much as some of the other people that lost equity and had vacancies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the strategy really works in an up and down market.
Yeah, fair enough. Now let's dig into the portfolio a little bit. So how many properties have you got at the moment? And I'm assuming they all are HMO?
They're all HMOs, yeah. So we've got one property that we own, and we've got four other properties that we have head leases on, and then we sublease the rooms to create additional cash flow for ourselves.
So five including PPOR?
Correct. Five properties create just shy of $90,000 a year cash flow for us. Yeah.
And that is gross or net?
That's net.
When you're signing the leases on these properties, normally what kind of lease are you signing? Is it a yearly, five-yearly, six-monthly kind of leases, or how does that work?
So we try to tailor the lease to suit what the owner wants. So if they want a long-term tenant in there, we'll offer them a two-year lease with a two-year option to extend. And we'll also offer them incentives like we'll take care of all maintenance up to the dollar value of $200, and then anything over $200 that would be there for them to repair.
Right. Okay. At the time of signing the lease, or when you're preparing the lease agreement, let them know that it will be leased to multiple different parties?
Yes, yeah. You have to be 100% transparent with what you're doing.
Yep.
So that they are comfortable with what you're doing, and you have to be comfortable that they know what's going on too.
Sure. And how are you finding, like with the student accommodation, because this is kind of partly similar, not exactly, but a different beast, like David said. How reliable are the tenants in these properties, I guess, because there's multiple tenants within each property. Do you see much of the issue with the tenant quality and all, and the turnover of the tenants?
It really depends on the location of the property. So if we look at where we are now, we've started managing other people's properties. So I'll take you to where we are now, then we'll step back to this. So we're managing other people's properties now, and the ones around the universities, we still get students applying for them rooms. But the properties out in the suburbs, we get, we've got everything from baristas to tradesmen to engineers, doctors, interior designers, and we've got people with good jobs and good incomes that just can't afford to rent a full house, furnish it, pay the bills, and everything else that comes with having your own property. With the HMO, they rent a fully furnished room. They gas, water, electric, and internet, and cleaner is included in their weekly rent.
Right.
And that offers them convenience, and I think that's why the strategy works as well as it works right now. We fully furnish these properties so that, yeah, so people can just turn up with a bag of clothes and a toothbrush, and they're in.
Right. And generally with these properties, what kind of locations you try and target when you are signing the leases?
Like, we've currently got them from Rockingham to Joondalup in Perth. So that's probably a 100K span from south to north. We've got close to 180 rooms that we manage. And, you know, the rooms that fill faster are the rooms closer to major infrastructure. So like cafes, shopping centres, train stations, good bus routes. The ones that are a little bit further out with no major infrastructure around them, they still fill, but they just fill a little bit slower.
What are the main pain points that you normally see coming?
You can probably imagine trying to put five or six individual personalities into one house. Sometimes their personalities can clash. And if it's not the personalities that clash, it's because someone leaves mess in the kitchen. So we usually have phone calls from everybody leaving pots and pans in the sink, people leaving towels in the bathrooms, them sort of things. So now we've got house rules in place that state what everybody needs to do to live in the house harmoniously. Doesn't eliminate all problems, but it definitely eliminates quite a few of them.
Right. Do you put them through a psychologist first to see if their psychology is going to match?
Personality test.
The property managers that we've employed, they're absolutely excellent at what they do. And for the amount of rooms and the amount of personalities they have to contend with, they do an absolutely amazing job. So if they are listening to this, keep up the good work. that's the biggest thing is the personality clashes. And just keeping that harmony in the house.
This is obviously a great way of doing it to some extent in a dropping market where the prices are dropping, that you're leasing and then subleasing. So you're actually not really taking any losses on the property itself because you don't own it. Mm-hmm. But have you actually looked at the same strategy, but rather than leasing and then subleasing, it's purchasing and then subleasing? And leasing basically, or subleasing, whatever you want to call it.
We have. We've currently got all our serviceability tied up in a development that we're doing. So right. We've currently got a 5-unit development that is on the outskirts of Fremantle in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
Once we finish construction on that and we sell all the properties down, then we'll be looking at increasing our portfolio size. But this development's took a little bit longer than it should have due to financing issues.
Mm-hmm.
With it being in Perth, not many funders wanted to fund it. We couldn't get many pre-sales. It's been a difficult project, but we've also learned a lot from all these things, all these issues that we've come across.
Okay. So to quantify this into numbers a little bit, if the lease that you're signing with the property owner, what kind of return are they, net or gross, you can tell us, are they getting for their property?
So if we take a head lease on their property, they just get market rent for a long period of time. So we can fix it for 2 years with a review after that 2 years. And then if the market goes up or down, we'll adjust our weekly rent to them.
Yep.
And then we'll extend for a further 2 years.
So it's like a normal, you're signing up as a tenant from their perspective, except you obviously put full disclosure to say this is your intention of what you're about to do. And you pay them rent and then essentially you sublease each of the rooms and the profit that you make or the difference between what you're getting in terms of each of the rooms summed up versus what you're paying them you're paying the landlord is the actual profit you make out of each property.
That's correct, yeah.
So hang on, did I get this right? So the leases with the buyer, with the owner of the properties are signed at the market rate, right?
Yeah.
And then is there some profit sharing after that happens? There's no profit. So what's the motivation for the landlord in that case to go through this hassle of leasing it to the multiple tenants, essentially? I mean, why won't you let a normal family rent it where the turnover is going to be much less? You'll still get the market rent. There'll be probably less wear and tear of the property versus giving it to someone like you and then you subleasing it and then all the other stuff that happens in parallel.
Yeah, good question. So when we lease the property from the owner, they just deal with me direct. I'm the only point of call for them. What we do with the property after I lease it, all the tenants that live in the house, all the housemates, they deal direct with my property managers. So the owner, it's hassle-free for them. They literally hand the property over to us with a long-term lease in place, and we take care of everything else, and they just get their weekly rent paid into their bank account as it would be with a normal family. A lot of these houses get built to such a size that a young couple will move into a four-bedroom house and not use half of the house. So with the HMO, we use every bedroom in that house, every spare room, to create affordable accommodation and create cash flow for ourselves. And the reason that they would rent direct to us is because we take out an extra insurance policy on the property. So to cover, it was in tandem with the landlord's policy. So we've got a separate insurance policy that we take out. We guarantee their rent for 2 years. And if they want us to extend again for a further 2 years, we'll extend again. So we got long-term tenants. We fully furnish the house. We send cleaners through the house on a fortnightly basis. Wow. And yeah, so there's more pros and cons when you write them down. I'll go back to what you mentioned about a family living there and less maintenance. Yeah. Now, if you think of a family with two toddlers, the kids are crashing the toys into the walls, damaging walls, writing on walls. We're renting the house to five adults who basically go to work all day, come in, get a shower, have some food, go to bed, and then wake up the next day and repeat. So the wear and tear is actually less on the property than if you would be renting to a family with small kids.
Right. You mentioned about the rental guarantee for 2 years. Is that something that you are providing based on the leases that you are getting, the subleases that you're going to? Oh, no, you won't have the subleases at the time. So you are just giving them straight up a guarantee that they'll get a rent for 2 years, and whether you're able to lease it after that or not, that's your headache.
That's correct, yeah. That's correct.
From the owner's perspective, I guess, Jess, to an extent, you know, they probably look at it and go, free, like 2 years, I don't need to worry about this as a rental property. I'm guaranteed that I'll be getting the rental income, and obviously any maintenance and any repairs I need to do. I'm assuming there's a clause that Neil has with the owner to say, if there's any damages, then we are liable to make sure they're all being repaired and fixed. And by the time we return the property, it's going to be in its original shape and form.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And I'll also point out as well, we pay a bond on that property, and then every housemate that moves into the house also pays a bond on that property. So in effect, there's a double, sometimes a triple bond on that property.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. That's very different concept, actually.
Very good concept, though, because you don't own the property, but you're making a profit out of it. Right. This is correct. A good business model in the sense that, you know, because you don't have to fork out tens and hundreds of $1,000s or get yourself a mortgage. But at the same time, you're leveraging other people's resources to be able to, you know, to be able to make a profit and get up to 90K of net income. That's pretty amazing, I have to say.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not easy to earn money. I mean, there's like everything, there's pros and cons. And I'm sure the personality clashes is only just a small glimpse of it. Are there any other cons that I guess for someone, you know, because otherwise it sounds too good to be true. Are there any other cons that our listeners need to be aware of in this type of rate?
So it's not as easy as it sounds. There is hard work, there's effort, there's persistence and resilience required to use this strategy. To go out there and physically negotiate on the head lease with the owner, there's a lot of... So, for instance, we probably applied for 30 head leases and we've only got 4 at the minute.
Yeah.
So we've been rejected from quite a lot of applications that we've put in. So first of all, you need to have thick skin and be used to getting rejected. and then you need to be able to take that feedback that you get and fine-tune your approach so that when you approach the next person, your approach and your application is a little bit better.
That's actually – so how do you go about hunting these properties? I mean, do you look at realestate.com.au or some local Perth website? Or how do you hunt these properties, or it's door-to-door knocking? What is it?
I just search on realestate.com, domain, Gumtree, Facebook Marketplace. So many owners are putting their properties on Facebook Marketplace right now for rent, without a property manager in the way. And that's a great place to look for these type of things, because if you can deal with the owner direct, you've got more chance of getting over the line.
Right. Didn't you Facebook Marketplace was that popular for renting properties?
Well, it's got all sorts of weird and wonderful things now, though, Jazz. You're missing out big time.
I mean, yeah. I need to be more active on Facebook. Yeah. Guys, I'll see you later. that's pretty good. So with the five properties that you have got, the net is about 90,000, you said, roughly, approx. Yeah. What's the gross figure like?
Oh, wow. Gross is probably around 250K. I've never actually worked out the gross. Yeah, I just always look at the cash flow, the cash on cash return.
Yep. And how much time and effort does it require with the portfolio size that you have got, five including yours? How much time and effort does it require for maintaining this style of portfolio?
With the right property managers in place, then virtually nothing. It's all about having the right team around you. So the first few that we set up, we managed them ourselves. And, you know, the hard effort bit, the startup time to get these things over the line, that's probably where the most effort is. So you've got to negotiate on the lease. Then you've got to do some safety upgrades to the property. Then you've got to put all the furniture in there. Then you've got to put the adverts online. And then you've got to do all the viewings of the rooms. Once the rooms are full, you only ever lose one housemate at a time, so that your rent never disappears altogether. It just takes a small dip. So after you've filled the house, there's just a small, couple of hours a week. If you're managing them yourselves, if you've got property managers, then even less than that.
Right. That's good. What's the minimum term that you go for?
The minimum we aim for is 6 months. Mm-hmm. We feel like a lot of the people that live in this style of accommodation don't like to commit too long. But the first house that we set up, we've still got the original housemates living there now. So that was coming up 3 years ago, and they just roll over on 6 month agreements over and over again. So some people just move in for 6 months and then move out. Some people stay there for a year and just roll over on 2 6 month agreements.
Yeah,
it all depends. All depends where it is.
For people who are thinking about trying HMO, what are the tips you will give them?
So tips I would give them is make sure you've got the correct insurance policy in place, and make sure you put the people that live in the house, make sure you put their safety first. So extra smoke alarms, evacuation signs, upgrade door handles, stuff like that. And it just makes you, if you put other people's safety first, then the flow on from that is great, because it'll look after itself.
Right.
What sort of insurance needs to be in place?
Stole the words out of my mouth.
I see.
There's a specific policy that you can take out in addition to a landlord's policy, which covers you for this. So it's like a share house policy.
So it's like a specific share house, and is that only offered by specific insurance companies or general insurers would do that? Any general insurers?
I'm not too sure, mate. Just the one we use right now is the one that we know about. I'm not too sure about other insurers.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty specific.
Can I also ask a bit about the property management side of things too? Because, I mean, my understanding is I don't think a typical property management agency would take these type of arrangements on.
Correct.
Can you describe a little bit about the property management that is required for HMO? What, what's your current arrangement, I guess?
Yeah. So we set the property management business up because people seen us converting these properties and seeing the results we were getting. And then people were coming to us saying, I've got this property. Can you help us convert this? And we found that every property we converted for our clients, we doubled the rental income, if not nearly tripled it on some houses. And basically the HMO property core sets them up, gets them ready for tenants, puts the furniture in there, does the safety upgrades, and then we pass them on to our property managers. and the property managers then take care of everything else. And we find that it generally takes us 4 to 6 weeks to fill a house. And then once it's full, like you say, you only ever lose one room at a time. So your rental income just takes a little bit of a dip.
Yep.
And yeah, I suppose the ongoing issues are just keeping everybody happy in the house. The property managers, we give the people that live in the house exclusive rights to the room with shared access to a common area. And that basically, that gives us the flexibility to enter the house to send the cleaners through, take care of any maintenance issues, and also assure people the vacant rooms.
From dollar figure perspective though, and it sounds like it's your in-house property managers that looks after these places. If someone wants to engage you, for example, Jazz has bought a place in Perth and he wants to convert it to HMO and he's looking for a property manager, what sort of property management agency fees would you charge and what sort of costs would you charge?
Yeah. So we charge a 1 week leasing fee per room and we charge 15% management fee. And some people think 15% sounds high, but we charge 15% of $1,000. Where normal management agencies charge 10% of $450.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Perth's PMV is pretty high.
With
given the amount of stuff and the amount of turnover that you may need to look at, I think that sounds pretty reasonable. Any other fees that listeners should be aware of?
We charge a fee. It's $80 for a property condition report and $80 for an inventory. So because these houses are fully furnished, we'll do an inventory of each room.
Yep.
And inventory of common areas. And then when the person moves into the room, they get a room condition report and an inventory for that bedroom.
Yep.
And that way they're not responsible to everybody else's rooms. They're only responsible for what's in that room. And they also get a common area condition report as well.
Yeah, okay. So that's like an entry report. Basically, when a new tenant's in, for a start of a lease, to do a new entrance report to record the conditions of the house plus all the inventories that you currently have. And when they move out, that's when you do an exit report as well, right, to basically reconcile. And so every time when the 6 months lease is up, then you charge the lease fee, essentially, once off, and then an ongoing of 15% for a total rent of up to $1,000 or over $1,000.
Correct. Yeah. Whatever the property rents out for, we charge 15%. And it's 15% per room. So if you've got a room that's vacant, we obviously don't charge a management fee for that room. We only charge it when it's occupied.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Mm.
No, I think that's pretty much all I have. I don't know, Jazz, what about you?
No, I don't have many more questions. I like the strategy though, to be honest. I think it's a great idea. Is it a pretty common strategy or there's only few adventurous people like you who are doing it?
Yeah, I think there's only a few people doing it. I know people that are doing it with Airbnb. So they're leasing the house and then putting an Airbnb and keeping the profit, similar to what we do with the HMOs. But from that, I don't know many other people that are doing it. We're certainly the only company in Perth that do what we do.
Right.
And in the last 2.5 years, we've converted over 40 investment properties and turn them into HMOs. And of them 40, we've virtually doubled the rent on every single property.
Right. So what's your end goal with this? Are you planning to, for your personal portfolio, are you planning to still look for more HMO properties where you can sign the head lease and then sublease, or you're pretty happy with the size that you have at the moment, which is 5 properties, including yours?
No, we're always looking for more head lease opportunities. So I actually put an application in for one, what day is it, day Friday? I put one in on Wednesday night for a property that was a 4x3 with a theatre room. So that theatre room will be the 5th bedroom.
Right.
And as for actual increasing our portfolio, now the 5 unit development is moving along nicely. We're going to start looking for another deal that we can put together. It will probably be a triplex where we keep one as a HMO and then sell the 2 properties behind it.
Yep. Neil, moving away from the property, I think we've discussed that enough. Some more interest, moving on to some actual interesting stuff or fun stuff. Probably gets a bit boring. Aliens, believe it or not.
Aliens. No, I don't believe in aliens.
Why not?
Good question. I've seen the movie Aliens with Sigourney Weaver, but I don't believe in them.
Crypto, here to stay or a fad?
I hope it's here to stay. I put a little bit of money into it last year, and I keep an eye on it every now and again. It's not doing anything exciting.
Yep.
So right now, instead of putting 10 grand into crypto, I'd rather put 10 grand into a head lease and make some money that way instead.
That's a great idea. How do you decide which one to go for, or it's just a eeny, meeny, miny, moe?
Yeah, I think I got sucked into the FOMO at one point, and just whatever anybody was talking about on a Facebook page, I sort of put a couple of $100 into it. And
right.
I put it in just as the crypto market sort of went south. So
mm-hmm.
it wasn't a lot of money, but it's still sat there doing absolutely nothing at the minute. Hey.
No, HMO is better, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
That's good. Driverless cars. Majority of the cars on the road will be driverless in the next 5 years?
Yes, I honestly think it will be. And where I live in Perth, we've got a driverless bus right now.
On road to carry normal passengers?
Correct.
Jeez, Perth is advanced, man.
Yeah, man.
Right. Okay, how's that going? What kind of experience have you traveled in one? And what's the experience if you have?
I haven't traveled in it, but I see it every day because it drives past the end of my road. So it's just a little bus that carries about five or six people, and it just travels up and down the road as a bit of a tourist attraction at the minute.
Do you look at the driving seat and laugh?
There is no driving seat.
I was going to say that. Is there a driving seat?
It's kind of just like two seats just looking at each other at either ends of the bus. So you can probably fit six people in, three people either ends, just looking at each other. And it just drives down the road, turns around and comes back.
I'm guessing the reason it's only six-seater bus is because they're testing at the moment?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
They don't want too many passengers in the hospital?
Yeah. I'd probably freak out when I look at this driver's seat. You know, where's the driver?
I'm gonna search on Google.
Neil should take a photo. Should take a video of it next time when it goes past, right?
yeah, no problem. I can do that.
Moving on to the next one, AI. Do you think AI will take over humanity? Either robots or AI, whatever you want to call it, will actually control humans?
Yeah, I watched the new Terminator movie the other night, and hopefully not. Because it's pretty scary what can happen.
I haven't seen it yet.
Quite good. It's quite good.
So what do you think? Will it happen or not in our lifetime?
I think it's happening already. If you look at I know people like Tony Robbins are investing heavily into AI at the minute because they see it as the next big thing.
Yep.
Depending how advanced it is right now is depending on if we're going to see in our lifetime. I truly believe we will, to be honest, because we're everything's moving at such a fast pace right now. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah, no, I agree on that part. That's all the fun stuff questions that I had, Neil. Look, really appreciate you coming on the show. I think this is a completely new strategy that I've come across in the residential space, and so does David. I think David, did you know about this before or not?
No. It's really eye opening. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So it's really good. Hopefully it keeps working out well for you, and good luck with your development project too. And
I reckon we'll bring Neil back on when the development project's up to the next stage, and we can obviously talk a little bit about experiences there too, especially with subdivision and new unit builds in Perth, you know, for WA. That's I think that's something that we haven't touched on before, that's for sure.
Sounds like it. But maybe Neil should be in that driverless bus doing that. So we can share multiple experiences. But now, thanks for coming on the show, mate. Hope listeners are enjoying the content. And if you guys are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jazz and David. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com.
Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regard to your personal situation.